Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. All right, great show lined up. Excited to have an excellent guest on the program with us, a topic that is very timely. All good stuff. Are you ready? Here we go. I have on the line with me Wade Fowl, who is a PhD and CFA. Chartered Financial Analyst. He is Professor of Retirement Income in the new PhD program for Financial and Retirement Planning at the American College. And I hold, one, two designations from that organization, the CLU and the CHFC. And I am really tickled because I follow Wade's work. Wade has done a lot of writing and research in the financial services area. He has a doctorate from Princeton University, and he has published research on retirement income in a wide variety of academic and practitioner research journals. He is really well-regarded in our industry and is really out in front on in a lot of areas in terms of research about retirement income and how much money you can take out safely. And he has written an article in the Wall Street Journal that caught my eye and I thought was very relevant, and it's the case for the reverse mortgage. And there has been, in the past, different thoughts about reverse mortgage, whether they fit or not, and when they fit, and when do they make sense. And since some of the increased regulation that we've seen come out in the mortgage area, these products have become a little more mainstream, and financial planners are looking at them as a way to access funds and be able to help people sustain their retirement income. So we've invited Wade to be on the program and talk with us about that. Wade, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, that's my setup. I always like to get that all front-loaded because I know that when we talk, you have a lot to share. So let's dive right in. You wrote the article here recently for the Wall Street Journal, and there is, as you know, and historically, and I know you are, despite the leading research and teaching and guiding others, you are still continuing to do research and be a student yourself of all these things that are part of the equation for retirement and investing and all of that. And so I'm very, very interested to hear what you've seen and what your views are about how the reverse mortgage, especially, I think you wrote specifically about the standby option, how that can all factor into the person's retirement plan. So you have the stage, sir. Oh, I'm okay. Interested in hearing your thoughts on that.
Uh-huh. Well, right. I got my own start in the retirement income world looking at the sustainable withdrawal rates, the idea of
Yes. How
much can somebody spend from their portfolio and make that be sustainable over retirement.
Right.
And then I became a professor of retirement income at the American College. And so it's really my duty to make sure I know about all the possibilities and
cool.
to just really try to remain agnostic about how the different retirement income tools can work. And it took me a long time to get to reverse mortgages. They definitely don't have the best opinion out there in the world in terms of all the late night commercials about them and everything.
Right.
So I just tried to remain skeptical until I could really start to dig in. But in the last few months, I have started to dig in and look at how the programs work and how it can be incorporated, what the research says about how a reverse mortgage can work as a part of an overall retirement income strategy.
Excellent.
And really started to gain a much more positive view about the possibility.
Excellent, Wade. Well, and for our listeners who are not familiar and haven't caught one of those late night news channel commercials about reverse mortgage being presented by a friendly face that they either grew up watching Happy Days or Law and Order or whoever it may be, for those folks that don't know, reverse mortgage in its simplest terms is a line of credit on your home that you can draw and don't have to make principal interest payments, and then at your death or when you leave the home or sell the home, the debt has to be paid back. But it's like, and I use those terms very loosely, like a home equity line of credit that you don't have to make payments on, and you can use it to pay off an existing mortgage and stop having to make payments on that, or just simply draw against it and use that money for whatever purpose. And as you said, Wade, we'll be getting into this in more detail, also use it as a source of supplemental retirement income at some point in your retirement.
Right. The traditional idea is people kind of just leave their home value as a last resort of, okay, I've got the home there, and if something happens with my portfolio, maybe I'll have to sell the home and use the equity that way. But it can just really make sense to think more broadly of how can you make your home, which is otherwise an illiquid asset, you can't really spend the value of your home, except through the line of credit with a reverse mortgage. That's really the way to start thinking about the possibility.
Very good. And Wade, do you, in what you've been digging into and again, maintaining your skepticism through the process, have you found that, and I'm sure you're finding a lot of different ways that this the reverse mortgages are using, are you finding that a lot of people are using it kind of as a standby tool, or are they using it to supplement their income and then put off having to liquidate or access other taxable retirement funds or a portfolio that's more designed for growth? Or are they using it just primarily, again, pay off a mortgage? What are you seeing the primary uses being right now in the marketplace?
Well, I'm really focused more on the research side and what the recent research has been saying can be a good use for them. In terms of how they're actually being used, I don't know a lot of the details about the how people are using them once they've opened them. They're still not really popular. I mean, there's a limited number of reverse mortgages being initiated each year. But the research is basically suggesting once the older spouse turns 62, that's the time to open the line of credit. And depending on the home's value, it might cost a more highly valued home up to a couple thousand dollars to open that. But then that just creates this line of credit that will then grow over time. And reverse mortgages are non-recourse loans, which means that you'll never owe more than the value of the home. So, and the other interesting thing is right now interest rates are so low, and that makes it a really tough time to retire. That's my research about how much people can spend in retirement.
Right.
Well, low interest rates means you have to kind of think about spending less. But it actually works to the benefit of a reverse mortgage because low interest rates allow you a higher line of credit initially on the home.
Okay.
And then that will continue to grow throughout someone's retirement. And then, if interest rates do go up in the future, that line of credit can really start to accelerate its growth. And if, for example, someone's home value declines, they might find that the line of credit is worth more than the value of their home. And that's kind of the point of the research I've done so far.
Okay,
I'm
with you.
This can help to protect the home value.
Excellent.
And then there's been other research that came over the last few years in the Journal of Financial Planning, which is a well-respected practitioner-based peer-reviewed journal, and research by Harold Avinsky, a well-known financial planner, along with some of his cohorts at Texas Tech University, and then also research by Barry Sachs and his brother that have both shown how just start to think, well, how can you use that line of credit as part of a retirement income strategy?
Excellent. That's the part I wanted to get to is how this can be worked to somebody's advantage. And to my question I posed in terms of the marketplace, I was going to get your feedback. I have seen in doing the work that I do for my clients, I've seen, and in talking with folks that are in the reverse mortgage market, I've seen all of the above being true, that people are using the reverse mortgages for a variety of things. Now, your research, and of course, some of these advances that are being made in terms of just some of the different application with regard to that non-recourse aspect of the reverse mortgage really is opening up a whole nother area. And this is an area, quite one of the reasons why I wanted you on, Wade, that this is an area that we are looking actually to expand into as a company, that we see it as being a really very powerful tool that could be integrated right into the financial planning process that we already do for our clients. So let's talk a little bit, if we can, about the non-recourse part of this. Well, actually, let's do this. Let's grab a quick break, Wade. Come back, and I want to dig in a little bit deeper into how the mechanics work with the non-recourse part of this equation with the loan, and then how that line of credit can end up being, can grow and be a resource in the future. Wade Fowle, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest, PhD and chartered financial analyst. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Wade Fowle on the line with me, and we're digging into the reverse mortgage article he just recently wrote. And I wanted to get into some of those mechanics, Wade. So let's first talk a little bit about the fact that non-recourse loans. So we've got the line of credit or actually taking out the loan on the home with the reverse mortgage, if that loan becomes worth or becomes bigger than the house itself, then the value of the home, then at when that person moves out of the home or they die, and then that debt needs to be satisfied. And if, let's just say for simple example, that the home is worth 150 and the loan has grown to 200,000 because it's non-recourse, basically the home is sold and then there the loan is satisfied with it's a deficient loan, but it's satisfied and there's no obligation to anybody else at that point.
Right. That's how it works. And that's part of the housing and urban development of the government with the HECM program, the home equity conversion mortgage. That's generally how people do the reverse mortgage through this government program. And it includes mortgage insurance premiums, that any amounts that people borrow from the line of credit, well, then there's a mortgage insurance premium charged on that. And that's what makes the lender whole at the end.
I got you.
So as you're saying, if the lender had provided you with $200,000, but the home is only worth $150,000, then it's that pool of insurance that is used to make sure that the bank doesn't lose in that case. But
excellent.
Right, with the non-recourse nature, you'd only be obligated to, or your heirs would only be obligated to pay the value of the home.
Cool. Very good. So the strategy then, and how your research and how you are, you know, the thought process here is that somebody could either go ahead and take out the mortgage and use those dollars, or part of what you really focus in on, way to, as I understand it, is looking at having this line of credit be established once you're eligible. And let's talk a little bit about that. That line of credit is established. It's based on a percentage of your home's value. And there's certain rules that have to be followed in terms of the maximum amount. Again, with HUD and all these, the regulatory overlay, the maximum amount that can be lent by the lender to the person who owns the home. And so let's just say, for example, you know, again, we got a $150,000 value home. Let's just say that that is $70,000, just as a simple example. That's the initial line of credit. Now take us forward. After we have the initial line of 70, that can increase. And what causes that to go up?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, okay, so when someone has that initial $70,000 line of credit, there are a few different possibilities. They can take out part of that, although the reason reverse mortgages got such bad press in the past was the idea that some kind of sleazy broker got them to take out the whole value of their home or as much as they could and put that into a terrible investment.
Yeah, that's
so
exactly
the government
right.
really limits that now. Okay. And then you can otherwise just tap that line of credit when you want to use it, or otherwise just leave it there to grow. And then so that's getting to your question. It grows. It's a little bit complicated formula, but it's basically there's going to be fees on anything, an interest rate on anything borrowed that on average might be about 3%. And then that would include this mortgage insurance premium. And then you add in the current short-term interest rate, the LIBOR rate, which is a number that comes from London. But currently, that number is like really close to zero. It's like 0.15%. And that's going to help define the rate that the line of credit grows. But if at some point in the future interest rates grow up, it's a variable rate. The line of credit will grow always at this kind of fixed component plus whatever that LIBOR rate is. And so if that LIBOR rate gets up to 2% in the future or 1.5%, then the line of credit is going to start to accelerate its growth. And that's why this idea that the line of credit can, if you don't tap into it initially, can grow to be worth more than the value of the home. Well, it's much more likely that something like that could happen when you're starting from this low interest rate environment today.
So it's a function of the where interest rates are today, and then also somebody taking it earlier rather than later. Now, of course, I'll state the obvious. This doesn't mean they ever have to actually borrow the money or use the money, but it's kind of, as you said, and how this is being the term that's being used in the industry is a standby line of credit that could be used. Now, from a financial planner standpoint, the reason why I am very interested in this, Wade, and that's a little bit of my, out on the street, so to speak, doing this and working with people, is the way I view this is this line of credit could be accessed periodically, as you said earlier, as needed. I see using it as a way of getting a supplemental source of income or cash flow. It's not really income, but drawing on this and allowing other investments or financial products to accumulate, and then basically holding off on accessing them where I give time perhaps to the market and to stock equity-based investments or to annuity-based invest programs that build up and have a future income and also allow for the whole Social Security maximization or optimization strategies to be integrated to where maybe by drawing on the line of credit with reverse mortgage might allow me to push off taking Social Security to age 70.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what the research is about. So what you're recommending there is based on the research. So that's great. It's the authors I mentioned earlier, what they had been looking at was this idea that you access a line of credit after a market downturn, and that helps you avoid having to sell other assets such as stocks after the market's declined.
Yeah.
And by not doing that, you mitigate or you reduce the risk involved with having to sell a greater percentage of whatever is left to fund a given spending goal when those assets have declined in value. And you give them time to return to their previous value of hopefully what goes down will hopefully come back up.
Sure. Well, you remember from our last interview, I called that dollar cost ravaging.
Right. That's the dollar cost ravaging.
And yeah, having to take it out while it's down. Yeah, we don't want to do that if we can help it. So the line of credit on the reverse mortgage might let us. And I love that because I'm a big believer in having lots of options when you build a financial or retirement plan and having these multiple buckets of money that you can pull from. And not to get too cerebral here, Wade, for folks that are saying, guys, don't go too deep on us on this. But the other thing that we can do is we can even, because the cash that comes out of the reverse mortgage is not taxed because technically it's a loan, we can even time when we want to incur more or less ordinary or capital gain income in tax
right.
years that are more favorable.
Right. Yeah, that's another great advantage. It's kind of like withdrawing from a Roth IRA.
Right.
That once you get up to, say, the 25% tax bracket or wherever it is, then you stop pulling out of your other taxable type of assets or tax-deferred assets and top up whatever spending you need from a Roth IRA or from the line of credit on a reverse mortgage. And that can help with the tax bill by keeping you out of the higher marginal tax rates.
Very good. Very good. A lot of different applications. Well, wait, I think I got this. I think I got it kind of figured out here. Where, go ahead and send me my PhD certificate. And
yeah,
I'm teasing. No, I think it's really fascinating. And regulatory evolution, the Dodd-Frank 2010, there were a lot more restrictions, of course, placed on mortgages in general. And there have been continued refinement that has brought some of the abuses that you referred to earlier. And I have seen that. I will tell you, I have seen it firsthand where people have done and been in maybe experienced a situation where they were induced to do the reverse mortgage and it wasn't necessarily the fit for them. But there's been so many advances. And I'll tell you what else I've seen, Wade, again, out looking at this and even evaluating the reverse mortgage for some of my clients, is the fees have become much more competitive. And for folks listening, Wade, that you know, there's actually the opportunity. You can get one without having to pay a big fat origination fee, which was one of the criticisms of earlier versions of reverse mortgages. You actually, there are programs available where there's not this big origination fee. You can actually get it without one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that now. And for this strategy about protecting the value of your home, counterintuitively, you want to pay a higher margin. You want the interest rate to be as high as possible.
It is counterintuitive.
You want the line
yeah.
of credit to grow as quickly as possible. And then once it's worth more than the value of your home, you don't really care anymore about how much interest you have to pay because you're not going to be paying the interest.
It's really once it gets above the value of the home, it really becomes almost like phantom interest. And it's a little difficult to get your mind around that fully when you're saying it's a, you know, people, especially people that have really looked at their home as something that this is protected nest egg and they don't want it to be historically, especially people that are retiring now, Wade, they've looked at it being a major accomplishment to be that home to be debt free when they retire and they don't want to retire until they are debt free with the home. But this is a really an out of the box paradigm shift in terms of the thinking about these, the home being just another financial asset, which of course, as you referred to earlier, also an illiquid asset. So it's really fascinating, this development that's occurring right in front of our eyes.
Right. And in terms of leaving a legacy for the next generation, it's kind of the conventional wisdom is people want to leave the home.
Right.
But by thinking more strategically and building liquidity for the home, and then with the strategy we mentioned about using the line of credit after a market downturn, that what the research was showing is that that sort of strategy, even though the value from the home will be lower, but the total financial assets available for the next generation for heirs can ultimately be higher. You have more financial assets, but less home equity. But overall, you're going to be able to give more to the next generation.
Amen to that, Wade. That's spot on. That's exactly how I'm envisioning. I've got a financial plan in my head right now, Wade. I'm looking at columns in my mind that how you could, you know, if you have a diversified equity portfolio and you can allow that to accumulate and not access it, or even, you know, and it's going to get a step up at death for capital gains, and, you know, you have, and it's a very liquid, easily transferred, easily divisible asset among heirs, just the sheer flexibility of that, and also maintaining those assets to help with another thing that we didn't talk about earlier, which is the whole area of long-term care funding.
Mm-hmm.
So very good stuff. Wade Fowle, ladies and gentlemen, PhD, CFA, and I just am thrilled to have him on the program. We're talking about reverse mortgages. We'll grab a quick break. We'll come back and talk to Wade a little bit more. Stay right there.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Wade Fowle on the line with me. PhD, CFA, and a giant, I will say, Wade, in the financial industry. I really applaud your work, and I'm not just trying to flatter you. Love what you're doing, and I'm glad you're able to help our listeners understand the reverse mortgage standby and the options. And I wanted to clarify, if we could, Wade, we've got a couple of minutes on, you know, one of the questions that that people may have in their mind as it relates to, you know, that trying to understand how does this line of credit increase? You know, the scenario you and I walked through was that the home values actually, in our simple example, home value stayed the same, or maybe it even goes down if we went through another housing crisis or another recession or whatever the case may. Home values may fall. So how does the line, you know, you went through some of the interest rates and calculations, but basically, is it true that the lender is increasing that line really separate and apart from the value of the home after the line's originally established?
Right. So the line of credit growth is part of the contract to set up the reverse mortgage, and it's not related to the value of the home. So currently, your example earlier was right, that you might be able to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 45% of the home's value as the initial line of credit, but then it will grow at approximately, it depends, each contract's different, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 3% plus, and then the 1.25% mortgage insurance premium, and then plus the one-month LIBOR rate, which is that variable interest rate. It's basically just a very short-term low interest rate right now. Well, always short-term, but currently quite low.
Right. Well,
so that's about 4.4% as the initial growth rate.
Right. I was going to say, so we probably end up with around 4.5%, 5% as the rolling up rate for this line of credit. So you don't have to have a PhD to, for people out there to say, okay, so I can do some math here that, you know, if it rolls up at 5% and maybe in the future rates are higher, it rolls up quicker, maybe at 6, 7, 8%. That could, over a period of time, could obviously, if your original value that you're getting with the line of credit is around 45, 50%, let's use easy math, say it's 50%, then 10 years at 7%, that line has doubled and now it's equal to the value of the home if the home hasn't changed in value.
Right, right. So 10 years might be a little bit optimistic,
cause, right.
But yeah, in 20 years
definitely.
Or less, even less than 20 years,
yeah.
If interest rates get up to, so that 3% plus 1.25% plus, say, another 1.5% or 2%, that's getting you to pretty decent growth so that within 15 or 20 years, the line of credit will grow to be worth the value, the current value of the home. And
so, it's also one thing that just occurred to me as you were describing that, Wade, is this is also a very strong hedge with regard to what home values may do in the future. That, you know, you're really, if you're looking at 62 when somebody takes this out, and let's say life expectancy, you know, let's just put 20 years on it. And of course, that's individual, but just as an average, let's say 20 years, and you have a stagnant housing market, then you've got an exit point with this line of credit. Now, it's when you get out down the road and you've got this line of credit that has grown and accumulated, and let's just say the line of credit now is 200 and the house is 150 again, just for a simple example. They can access that as they need to supplement their income. Can they then at that point even draw all of it out all at once?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can access the line of credit in terms of, right, the research article I wrote was about the hedging the value of your home. Mm-hmm. So if your home shoots up in value, then the line of credit won't catch up to it.
Right.
But that's
right.
Okay, because your home is so much more valuable than you might have expected.
Exactly.
But if the home price remains stagnant or even declines, the line of credit can grow to be worth more. Now, with this strategy, the timing is important because the line of credit always grows. But if you tap it too early,
right,
the growth in the line of credit will just reflect the growth in interest that is due, not new growth of funds you'll be able to access.
I'm with you. Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But again, it's a line of credit, and if they get down the road and we have this hedge has been sitting out there, and once this contract's established, it's done, it's fixed, it's there. The interest rates, of course, can change, but the contract is in place. Mm-hmm. And that's something then that down the road they can, again, that hedging purpose, which, what a great tool in the right situation.
Right. It can be really valuable for heirs. The timing is important, too, because, of course, if you wait too long and haven't accessed it yet and then have a sudden heart attack or something, and then it's too late at that point to access it. But
yeah,
if you get to this point where maybe, you know, the line of credit is worth $50,000 or $100,000 more than the value of the home, that might be a good point to just say, okay, I'm not going to be greedy, not going to keep holding off and taking this risk of never being able to access those funds, and just take it out. And then it's a windfall for the heirs at that point.
Good hedge, good strategy, definitely worth considering. Wade Fowle, a great guest. Glad to have him on the program. PhD, CFA, Professor of Retirement Income, and the new PhD program that I had teased Wade about earlier about sending me my certificate. Maybe down the road we'll work on that, Wade. Love having you on the program, and I will be more than happy to have you come back another time and talk with us.
Okay, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Wade.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Renata Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.